you don't have to be concerned that the other shows are there. And then, like I said, it never hurts to see what other people are doing. I don't think you have to sit there and model your whole show after someone, but I think by listening to other shows like you're wanting to do, you can educate yourself and it'll help you lay out a format of what you want to do. You might take a little bit here and a little bit there and then a lot from your own creativity, but there's no reason other shows can't give you some ideas that can help spice up your show as to how you do it.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's time for another episode, and it's great to be back with you. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Gary Leyland. Gary is a media producer, a keynote speaker, a prolific podcaster, and I mean prolific. He's a podcasting Hall of Famer, an author, an entrepreneur, and most recently a crypto enthusiast, as he describes it. He's also co-founder of Podcast Movement, the largest podcasting conference in the world. Gary first began building e-commerce websites way back in 1996. Just to put that in perspective, that's before Google was around. He produced his first podcast in 2004, and now he's educating people in all things cryptocurrency based on what he's learnt in his own podcasts on that topic. He's also speaking, organizing the Podcast Movement annual conference, and hosting and publishing 12 podcasts and 9 video shows at the last count. A very busy man. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. Now, you can access the Transformational Marketing Hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP. That's innovabiz.co/VIP. If you don't yet have an account, just click the blue Take a Peek Inside button and you'll see what's there and can decide whether it's for you or not. As I said, it's free and exceptionally useful, and especially for you, my podcast audience. In our discussion, Gary talked to me about the importance of keeping up to date with what's happening in the world and to recognize needs and opportunities to improve things, make them better, which is, in fact, innovation. He gave us tips for starting a podcast or a video show and where to get ideas from when you first get started. And he talked to me about using your podcast to learn about topics that are of interest to you and that you're passionate about. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Gary Leyland. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome today to the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from Arlington in Texas in the USA, Gary Leyland. Gary is a media producer. He's a keynote speaker, a prolific podcaster. In fact, he's a podcasting Hall of Famer, an author, an entrepreneur, and most recently, he's got involved in cryptocurrency. He calls himself a crypto enthusiast. He's also founder of the Podcast Movement, which is the largest podcasting conference in the world. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Gary. It's a real privilege to have you as a guest.
It's nice to be on. You did your homework there. I was pretty impressed that you did that much homework.
Yeah, well, that's part of the process. So Dave Jackson, who was our guest on episode 145, suggested we speak to you. So Dave is another podcasting Hall of Famer, and he suggested we speak to Gary. So a big hello to Dave.
Yeah, Dave is a good guy. I've known him. Well, actually, Dave, myself, and Rob Walsh, who works with Libsyn, and he's in the Podcast Hall of Fame, and Paul Colligan probably did the first podcast about podcasting or podcast news show back in 2005 together. So Dave and I have been crossing paths for a long time, in other words.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you on. Now, you also began, well, you were an early adopter of websites. You built your first e-commerce website back in 96. Now, just to put that in perspective for people, that was before Google existed. You produced your first podcast in 2004, and now you're educating people in all things cryptocurrency, as well as speaking, organizing podcast movement, annual conference, and hosting and publishing about 12 podcasts and 9 video shows at last count. So very busy man. So we really appreciate you spending time with us. But before we talk all things podcasting and video and cryptocurrency, let's find out a bit more about you as a person. When you were a young child, what did you think you wanted to do when you grew up?
At first I wanted to be a fireman and then an astronomer about the first grade. But I think the first time I ever thought about having a job probably was in about fourth or fifth grade, and I kind of wanted to be in marketing. I know that sounds strange, but I used to enjoy TV commercials, and I used to make up TV commercials. Matter of fact, in fourth grade, we had to do a skit in front of the class, and my neighbor and I teamed up, and I wrote this script, and it was a cigarette commercial. Okay. I don't know if you could do a cigarette commercial in your class anymore.
Yeah. Yes, it might be a little bit politically incorrect these days.
Yeah, but I would say that it was to be into marketing was really probably my first thing. And then later, as I grew older, I wanted to be an artist. So I majored in art in school, and I went from marketing to being an artist, to being a salesman, to being an entrepreneur.
And so was your first foray into business the Lowlands Wallpaper and Interior Store? Because that's an interesting story that kind of resonates with me a little bit too.
Well, that was one of my first ones in my adult life, I guess. You know, I had done several other things. I used to, on Saturdays and Sundays, I would buy, the night before, I'd buy cases of Coca-Cola, canned Coca-Cola, and freeze them. We were kind of poor, so we couldn't afford a cooler. That's hard to believe if we couldn't afford a cooler, but we didn't have one. And so I would buy cans of Coca-Cola and freeze them solid and take them out to the golf course and sell them to the golfers. There's a spot where you're the furthest away from the clubhouse.
Yeah.
And by then they were really hot, and I would sell out of the Cokes every Saturday and Sunday. Yeah. I really did a good little business out there, and I had a lawn cutting business for a while later. And then I started a photography business. I grew up in a real tourist town, and I would walk around with a shirt that said, I remember it said on the back, "I will take an 8x10 photo of you for $9.95 or something like that. And people would pay me to take a photo of them, and then I would mail it to them. And I did that for a while. And then I did window dressing. I used to do department store windows. I can't remember what the name of that company was, but I did that for a while. And then I would say then that the one that succeeded was the window covering company and wallpaper company.
Yeah.
That was the first one that really took off and succeeded.
So you've had the entrepreneurial blood in your veins right from the beginning by the sound of it.
Yeah, I think so. I would have to say.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, what is it that you do today and why do you do it?
Well, I run two brick and mortar stores, a network of websites. And then I do podcasting and books and videos to market the websites and conferences to make money, I guess, would be the answer. I mean, to make a living.
Yeah.
I like doing my own deal. I feel like I'm pretty creative. I kind of do stuff and kind of get burnt out with it and move on to the next project.
But you keep them going, though, which is really interesting.
I've never been figuring out how to sell them.
Now, I'm really fascinated by the story in particular. I mean, we'll talk podcasting in some more detail because a lot of my audience is really interested in podcast as a medium. But I'm really fascinated by what you've done with the podcast to drive traffic or to drive customers back to your Leyland's wallpaper and interiors, because that's kind of relates to something that we did in my corporate days well before Google as well, which was starting up the Paint Quality Institute, which was an online information portal, really. But what you've done is started a podcast that talks about, and I can't remember the name of the show off the top of my head now, so you'll have to help me with that, but talks about a TV show renovation of buildings and use that as educating your audience that then are interested in buying wallpaper and buying interior decoration material.
Yeah, that's we have two of them. We have Fixer Upper podcast, which is about the Fixer Upper TV show. Hmm. And then we have the Hometown podcast, which is about the Hometown TV show. They're both Home and Garden TV, HGTV shows. And we watch the episode. And then we record a podcast about our thoughts on the episode and what we liked. And during the podcast, we market and by talking, not really commercial, but we market our decorating websites by talking about them, especially if we see a wallpaper in the house, you know, whether it's an old one they're tearing down or a new one they're putting up, then we can work that into talking about our wallpaper store. And so that's one of the ways we market the stores. But all my podcasts, I put together to market products or stores or websites or something I do. So I don't really hunt for sponsors because I am the sponsor. I create the shows to sell my products or help sell my products.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things I really like about that, apart from, you know, that I can relate to how you've taken that home decorating show, which is presumably that they're very popular in the area where they run, and you've piggybacked off that to provide people more information through a podcast that then, and it's the right audience, which is the really key thing, giving them more information.
It's definitely a targeted audience.
Mm. And I think you do that with most of your shows. Most people go into podcasting to and have this idea of somebody will sponsor me and I'll get advertising dollars. But the reality is that very few shows get to the level of audience where big advertisers are keen to spend money on them, isn't it?
Yeah, most people I know that make big money off a podcast sell something, whether it's a class or training or a book or how to, and in my case, it's a physical product. You know, so most people that I know that make good money off of a podcast do not make it from a sponsor. They may make some from a sponsor, but that's a small part of their revenue from their podcast. So I kind of feel like that's if that's your train of thinking, I'm going to create this podcast and all these sponsors are going to flock to my website and advertise because they can be on my podcast. You're probably going to not last very long. You probably get tired of doing all this work when you realize no one's advertising.
Yeah, be disappointed. All right. So what's the process you go through then in starting up a podcast and getting it launched and getting it out in front of the right audience?
Well, I really don't have a very difficult podcast process, you know, with the CryptoPod. My newest adventure is into, as you said, Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. And I started the Crypto Cousins podcast, I guess a little over a year ago, because I was getting into the field and I didn't start it as much to sell as I did to educate myself. You know, to me, there's two things you can do with podcasts. You can sell stuff or you can use them for education. I can get the top people in the world. I mean, I've had billionaires on my show. Yeah. To educate me about cryptocurrency, and I can ask these people who know it way better than I do at a much higher level than I do, at a level I may never be at, and I can ask them personal questions just by having them on my show.
Yeah,
and that was the purpose of the Crypto Cousins show and the Gary Leland show when I was running it. For instance, on the Gary Leland show, I wanted to get into Amazon. So there's a guy named Chris Green. He does about $200,000 a month on Amazon. So I asked him if he'd come on the show when I was setting up Amazon. He said, sure. So I talked to him for an hour about Amazon on my show and asked him all the questions I wanted to know.
Hmm.
So I got a personal one-on-one training from one of the top guys in the world on Amazon sales. And if I'd have just called Chris and said, "Hey, Chris, can I talk to you for about an hour and you tell me how to do Amazon?"
Yeah.
I doubt, since his book was like $400 at the time, I doubt he would have spent much time with me. But as it turned out, not only did he spend an hour with me answering all my questions of things I wanted to know, he also said, "Hey, let's do this again sometime."
Hmm.
You know, so that's how the Crypto Cousins started. And when it started, it's very simple. You know, I just, there was no thing to it. I had my art guy make the artwork for it. I came up with the name by searching domains and I put it together and just started doing a podcast. I don't do a lot of planning and thinking. I'm not one of those people that plan things out. I just, you know, I could decide to do a podcast tomorrow and I'd have it up by tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's more how I operate. And that's pretty much how I operate on everything. But that was how Crypto Cousins started. And now in a year, I pretty much consider myself not an expert of the world, but I'm pretty damn knowledgeable on the subject, you know. But like I said, I've had been able to talk to, today was episode 73, and I've talked to top experts in the world about this subject 73 times. You know, yeah. We had a crypto conference. So I had a crypto conference in August and had some of the top people in the world, you know, there for my first conference. So that's one way to use crypto, to use a podcast.
Yeah.
Besides, you, I guess you're trying to, it's the saying, teach a guy to fish and he can keep fishing forever. You know, so if you get educated, you can keep making money forever off of it, or you can make the money one time.
Hmm.
You know, or give him a fish type thing.
Yeah, that's a great strategy. And, you know, I always talk about podcasting as a really neat marketing tool that's often overlooked, but also as a tool to educate yourself, because exactly what you said, you know, you can speak to somebody who's an expert in their field who would either not be interested in talking to you without a podcast, or might say, "Well, sure, I'll spend an hour with you, but it'll cost you thousands of dollars."
Right.
Yeah. So it's like having a masterclass.
Now, my other crypto podcast, just to give you the example, I have another one I do every day called 4-Minute Crypto. And now that one is a marketing podcast. So during every episode, you know, I put in a commercial, call it a plug or whatever, for my convention, you know, or a website of mine. And so that one does nothing but market, where the other one is more educational. And maybe I'll get a sponsored show once in a while. You know, if someone wants to pay us $1,000, we'll let them come on a show if they're trying to market something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we'll do a marketed show with them. But that's the Crypto Cousins. Really, that's not our goal. But if they're willing to give me the money, we'll have them on.
Yeah.
That's not my goal. But that's not my goal in this.
Mm. So how do you go about then promoting a new podcast? I mean, you've done, well, I think there's 12 active ones, but you've probably done quite a lot more than that. And I think you also do a podcast service for clients. So I imagine you've done quite a lot of podcasts in terms of setting them up and launching them.
Yeah, I pretty much just start out with growing my social media. You know, right when I start doing it, I start building my social media sites and growing those by friending people or following people that I think are going to follow back and hopes they'll follow back. You can build out, you know, a site, like a Twitter site or something, pretty quickly just by following people. And then niche you'll follow. A lot of them follow you back automatically. You know, yeah. And then you get to a point that you follow it enough. You're limited on how many you can follow in proportion to how many follow you. So you get to a point you have to quit following people. So you have to get rid of them all, clear out all the people you follow, and then start over, you know, because you can't follow anyone else. And then, and doing the same thing on Facebook, get a page and start marketing it. I have a lot of followers on my other things. Not that they'll all be interested, but some of them will be, and you can direct those people. But it's really just hard work. I mean, going through the process, you're just following people and working and putting it on Twitter and sharing it to tags that people follow. It's just a process.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have any secret. I just, like I said, I just work it. When I put out an episode, like tomorrow an episode will come out, I'll be spending half the day just posting it and sharing it and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So that's really important. So, yeah. So do you set up
a... Yeah, it's not... I don't have a real strict process, though. So I'm probably the least, you know, when it comes to PewE interview, I probably have the least regimented process of anyone you're probably going to talk to.
But know? Yeah, but you've done it so much that it's probably second nature to you.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I'll go with that. That sounds good to me.
Yeah. So do you set up a separate Twitter account for each podcast?
Yes, I do.
Okay. That's interesting. Yes. Mm. And a separate Facebook.
They all have their own.
Yeah.
Yep. They all have their own Facebook too.
Mm.
And then most of them will have their own blog for it too. Mm-hmm. So they all have their own blog. They have their own Facebook page. They have their own Twitter. They have their own Instagram. They have their own everything.
Mm. Okay. That's a really good tip. I hadn't thought of it in those terms.
Yeah. So like tomorrow I'll share Crypto Cousins podcast. Will come out tomorrow and I'll share it on the Crypto Cousins podcast Twitter page and the Facebook page. And I'll share it on my page. Plus I'll probably share it on the 4 Minute Crypto. So, you know, a lot of the things are similar, so you can share them on other things.
Hmm.
You know, when I share the Fixer Upper podcast, I share that on the Fixer Upper podcast and on my personal page. I'll probably share it also on Hometown and then on their Facebook pages because they're similar interests. Yeah, I wouldn't really share that on, like, I wouldn't really share the crypto podcast, for instance, on the Fast Pitch TV, Fast Pitch Softball TV Facebook page. Because there's no similarity interest there. But if it's one of my shows and it has a crossover audience, I'll share it on the media I've built for the other for another show.
Yeah. So the Fast Pitch podcast, or that's actually a TV show, isn't it? So you do video with
it. Well, it's a video podcast.
Mm.
So I have the Fast Pitch TV show, which is a video podcast, and I have the Fast Pitch radio show, which is an audio podcast.
Okay. So two separate things. So how did you get involved? Because I know you're really passionate about softball. How did you get involved in that? And talk us through, because you made an interesting comment on an interview I heard where you said, I became the press, which is a fascinating take on, you know, how you use podcasting to get into the games and get access to players and so on.
Yeah, I did become the press. I am the press. I just started working it. That probably was like my first podcast back in 2004 was a sports podcast, which evolved into Fast Pitch TV as video came. And I just started going to events, asking for press passes and stuff. And very quickly, it didn't take long at all. You know, I was going to the College World Series for softball as the press, you know, had field passes, had press passes to sit inside, which is a big deal in Oklahoma City in July with 105 degrees. So that quickly became that. And, you know, there's really no event that I go to at that level that I'm not known by a ton of people now that have watched my media. Mm-hmm. Now, if I go to something local, you know, out of the fields, people don't know who I am. But if I go to a national event, I'm pretty well kind of like a semi-celebrity at that event. For softball. But yeah, I worked that into being press. I know most of the Olympians now. I've interviewed most Olympians, most college coaches that are winning coaches. But yeah, after a point in time, I became the press. And I could do that because I had a niche, a small niche. I don't think I could have accomplished that if I'd have been doing baseball, because baseball is so big here in the States, where girls softball is not that big. So I wasn't competing with major television networks, you know, 'cause they weren't even covering it hardly.
Yeah.
You know, so because of the fact I was giving them so much press compared to the amount anyone else gave them, I quickly became in that niche, the press. So like I said, a niche is a good thing. You can dominate a niche. It's hard to dominate a mainstream because there are a lot bigger players in there going after that mainstream stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really good advice there. And I'm fascinated, though, how did you decide that you wanted to cover softball? Was that through your
market? To market my softball business. I have a softball business.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, as I said earlier, everything I've done podcasting-wise has been market my business.
Okay, so you chose a niche where you thought you could have where there was a need.
I had a softball business, so I said, oh, let's do a podcast for it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. So that's a very smart way to market that, and also gives you access to something that you probably very passionate about, judging by what I've seen.
Yeah, yeah. Not quite as much as I used to be. You know, anything after you do it long enough becomes work.
Yeah.
You know, that's why when people always ask me, they used to ask me this back in 96 when I started a website and 2004 when I started a podcast. People always ask, what should I do it about? I go, it should be something you really like, because I don't care what it is. It becomes work after you do it enough. So maybe if you love it when you start, you'll still like it 10 years later.
Mm.
But if you don't even care for it when you start, you're probably going to hate it 10 years later.
Yeah, if it becomes too routine and it doesn't feed people's need for a variety. But so
it becomes work. Yeah. And no one really, when you get down to it, not many people really like work, or they'd pay to do it on weekends.
All right. So tell us a bit more about Podcast Movement then. I know I haven't personally been to one yet. I'm looking forward to getting to maybe the next one. It is the biggest podcast conference in the world, and I believe the next one's in Florida in August next year.
Yeah, last year was in Philadelphia, and I think we had 2,500, and we'll pass 3,000 this year. Hmm. 3,000 attendees in Florida. I think this is the sixth one, maybe. We've been to Dallas, Fort Worth, Chicago, Anaheim, Philadelphia, and this year, Florida. I think they had six. I didn't count as I went along. But it's a great event. I mean, it's just, like I said, it's growing and growing and growing. I do very little in reality with the event. Most of the work is done by Dan Franks, Jared Easley. They're the two strong people. There are four of us that were the co-founders, Dan Franks, Jared Easley, myself, and Mitch Todd started it up in Dallas, Texas, like I said, 6 years ago. We have usually, maybe there's six sessions going on for 3 to 4 days, six sessions at a time. People from all over the world. Actually, even the first one we did, we had people from all over the world.
Hmm.
So we started drawing big numbers right off the bat. We started it with a, not a GoFundMe page, but a, I can't think of the name of it now. It was like a GoFundMe page.
Yeah.
And we wanted to raise, I think we were trying to raise $11,000, $12,000 to help us get the first one done. And we ended up doing $30,000. Hmm. So I think it was the right place at the right time. There was a need for it. And I remember we were all concerned, would we sell the $11,000? Worth of get the backing to do it, and then we pass that like maybe the first couple of days, you know. So people love it. It's a great event. We have great sponsors. We have the podcast awards there. We have vendors throw huge parties at night for the attendees. They're great parties to go to. We had Castbox out of I think they're out of China. Threw a huge party last year for their app, you know, to kick off their app.
Hmm.
Then we have a vendor show there that I don't even know how many vendors are there, but everybody's there, whether it's a speaker company, microphone company, podcast hosting company, WordPress. I mean, you name it, they're there. So it's a good opportunity for people also to show to find out for more information, to find out about equipment, test different microphones, see what they like, how they sound the best on, things like that.
Hmm. Yeah. Podcast is paradise by the sound of it.
It's a great thing. Hmm. Podcastmovement.com. There is a podcast paradise, but that's not us. We're Podcast Movement.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get it right. So there's a theme that goes through all of the activities that you do, I think, and it's very powerful, and you're kind of quite humble about doing things without strict process or anything. But I think what strikes me in all that I've read and I've heard today is that, you know, you see a need, and you seem to have a really good ability to recognize a need at the right time when it's right to address it, fill that need.
I think I've lucked into that quite a few times in my life, but someone did tell me the other day that If you do it once, it's luck. If you do it twice, it's not. And I've done it quite a few times. So I think I do have ability to see what's coming up, what's going to be popular before it happens, or to recognize it. And that's why I'm into crypto. I think that's the next big. I think cryptocurrency is where podcasting, or where web internet was in 94.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's where we're at. So I feel like this is another big thing that's getting ready to just break loose. Whether people believe in it or not, I'm not here to. That's not my what I'm talking about. I'm not trying to convince. Well, I got nothing to make off you, you know, if you buy Bitcoin. It doesn't help me at all. You aren't going to buy enough to make the price go up and make me any money. I'm just saying I think that that is where the state of that technology is at, is where is before. I don't know. Were you on the internet before there was like Netscape browser? I call it the Netscape browser.
Yeah. I was. Yeah.
And that's when the internet really took off. When all of a sudden, even though you might have had a 12K modem, you know, that made that noise and took forever to load, you could see a photo.
Yeah.
You know, you go, oh, look, there's a picture. You weren't watching video maybe, but you could see a picture.
Mm.
And that's when everything just went wild. And that moment hasn't happened yet in that technology. So I think we're at the pre-Netscape moment in that technology. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm involved in that heavily, because I think that's going to be the next breakout thing that's going to change everything like the internet did. But yeah, I seem to be pretty good at seeing that stuff ahead of time. So I don't know what that's called. I don't think it's called necessarily being smart. I think it's paying attention.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it probably is paying attention. Yeah. It's an interesting analogy to compare that to the birth of the internet. And there's quite a few things around where, you know, there were those trigger things that just all of a sudden turned something that was kind of simmering along and perhaps just floundering a bit, all of a sudden something happened and it kind of took the world by storm.
Yeah. And like I said, that hasn't, we haven't had that moment yet in this technology, but it is a technology. Don't make any doubts about it. It's not, it is a currency also, but that's not the thing that's appeals to me. It's the technology of it.
Yeah.
So as that technology grows, well, the currency will become more in use also, which I have no problems on making money off of it. But that'll be why.
All right. Well, I haven't really delved into crypto much myself.
Like I said, so I'm not trying to sell you on it.
No.
I got nothing to make off you on it.
I will pay more attention to what's going on, because I agree with you. The blockchain technology, I think, is something that's got huge potential and could revolutionize the whole e-commerce transactions and even more. So,
well, you know, CastBox now out of China, that listening app or podcasting app pays shows in crypto. You know, people can get crypto for listening and give it to tips to shows they like, you know, in the marketplace. So it's creeping into podcasting.
Well, I've just started using Brave browser. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, you get the BAT token.
That's right. Yeah. So the way its model is that they block all advertising by default. And so you then reward websites that you want to see and advertising you want to see by awarding points and so on.
The BAT token's worth 13 cents right now, 13.9 cents per token, but you're getting it free. I mean, you know. So it's just like it's free money.
Mm. So it's definitely finding its way into apps and into the internet.
Yeah, I think I may be wrong, but gosh, the guy who invented the Brave browser, he did something really big, like maybe was one of the founders of Netscape or something. I don't know why that's just coming to my mind for some reason, but if you looked up his history, you go, oh my gosh, this guy really knows his stuff, whoever this guy is. This isn't some guy just messing around. This is a guy who knows his stuff.
Mm.
You know, I don't know why I think it's Netscape he invented, but it's something like that, something really big that he invented. So he's not just some joker.
Okay.
Oh, and I like the Brave browser. I'm enjoying it. I have it set up.
Hmm. All right. Now,
sorry if I get off the subject though.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I brought it up. So what I was going to ask about is what's your advice? What advice would you give for somebody that is keen to start a podcast but kind of isn't sure how to get started?
Well, I'd say a couple of things. I'd say number one, and they kind of go together. Number one, don't be concerned if there are a lot of other people doing a podcast in the same niche that you want to do it in. There's no reason yours couldn't be the best. I mean, there's no reason you might not be covering better points than they do. I'm one of those ones, though, when I started Crypto Cousins, I subscribed to every crypto podcast I could find, you know, and for a month. During that month, I must have listened to 500 episodes of different podcasts just to see what other people was doing. Not necessarily to copy them, but to get ideas.
Yeah.
And let's face it, you can only make the wheel so many ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of it's not anymore just inventing something or creating. It is just knowing the information. Like on the Crypto Cousins podcast, every week I start off the show telling the price of Bitcoin and how it has done since the episode before a week ago. Like I go, this week's price of Bitcoin, $3,422. That's up $12.52 or 1.8% or whatever, which that wouldn't be 1.8%. I realize that, but I'm just saying this off my head. I don't want anyone adding that math and thinking that it's worth it. But I heard that on a podcast somewhere. I have no idea what podcast it was. I have no idea if the podcast is still in existence. But a year ago or 16 months ago when I started, I heard that and said, hey, I like that. And yeah. So I incorporated it on my show. And all the time people go, hey, I love listening to your show, how you started off, because I don't keep up with it all week, but it gives me an idea of where it's going.
Mm.
So there's little things you can learn from doing other people's shows. So to me, like I said, don't be scared of a niche that's full. There can be, I can tell you right now, in crypto, I've never seen such a crowded niche. Like I said earlier, fast pitch softball, empty. Mm-hmm. Cryptocurrency, whew, huge, tons of shows. I can't believe how many shows there are. But I'm still one of the, I just got something the other day for the top 10 podcasts in crypto, and I've only been out a year. So you don't have to be concerned that the other shows are there.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, it never hurts to see what other people are doing. I don't think you have to sit there and model your whole show after someone, but I think by listening to other shows like you're wanting to do, you can educate yourself and it'll help you lay out a format of what you want to do. You might take a little bit here and a little bit there and then a lot from your own creativity, but there's no reason other shows can't give you some ideas that can help spice up your show as to how you do it.
Hmm. Yeah, it's great advice. And you said there were two things?
Well, those were the two.
Oh, okay.
Don't be scared to have a crowded niche.
Yeah.
And start out before you go. Listen to what other people are doing in that niche.
Hmm.
Familiarize yourself with other people's shows, what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And after listening, you may go, God, all these guys are terrible. Mm-hmm. And you may even feel better. Yeah. They're all terrible. I don't like what any of them are doing.
Hmm.
So I know I'm going to have a better show. I know I'm going to do good.
Hmm. Yeah, well, if it's a niche that already has a lot of podcasts, that actually gives you the benefit of a benchmark and saying, okay, I can improve on these things. Whereas if it's a new niche and you don't have that benchmark, you're kind of going in blind in a way.
Yeah, well, like I said, when I went into crypto, I couldn't believe how many were in there because I'd come from everything I'd ever done was a real small niche.
Hmm.
Because they're home remodeling show podcasts, fast pitch softball podcasts. I mean, I've never competed in a big niche like this. And I've become friends with quite a few podcasters. And we've had each other on our shows and we talk all the time. And we're thinking about starting a thing where we're helping each other out promote all our shows. So I think podcasts benefit when they all work together. Kind of like, I don't know how car lots are down there where you're at, but here in the States, car lots all get on the same street.
Yeah.
Or in the same area. You never really see a car lot and go, oh, there's not another car lot within 10 miles of here. They always cling together. They found out a long time ago that they all make more money if they're all in the same street.
Hmm.
by drawing large crowds to that area. They all will get their share of the business. And I think that's how podcasts should look at it. They all benefit if they all work together rather than going, oh, that guy's in my niche. I can't do anything with him.
Hmm.
Well, you'll probably do better if you cross promote with him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great analogy. And I've found, you know, getting people on that in some ways offer the similar services or products as I do is actually really helpful. It helps us both.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it helps you as much. I don't think it hurts you at all.
Hmm. That's right. Yeah.
That's why I've never turned down an interview. Even if the show is a guy's first episode, you never know when that guy's first episode, when that guy's going to turn out to be John Lee Dumas.
Yeah.
And people are going to go back and listen to his entire back catalog, you know?
That's so, right. Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's the other beauty of podcasting, isn't it? The whole episodes, the whole history is there.
And some people do start with show number one and go all the way through them.
Yeah. And much of it
is. They listen to the recent episode and say, hey, I like this. Let me go back to number one.
Hmm. See how it started. Hmm. All right. Now, you also do a lot of video and.
I like editing video.
You like editing video? Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I find that really relaxing for some reason.
Yeah. I enjoy editing video too, except that with our internet, it tends to slow things down when I'm trying to upload or download. So that's very frustrating, but that's particular to our area, I think.
Yeah. I have a problem with that at my office, but not at home.
Yeah.
My office, it takes forever for some reason. So, but at home, it's so quick that I get frustrated here at the office.
In terms of getting on camera, then, what do you say to people that say, I don't like to see myself on camera, I don't like to go on camera, or so on? Particularly, you know, if we accept that video is such a powerful medium to get engagement and...
A lot of people are just scared.
Hmm.
I think, you know, when back in 2004 when I did my first podcast, it was an audio podcast, and I went into my company warehouse, and I was the only one. I took my laptop over there with my mic, and I was the only one in a 900 square foot warehouse. Nobody was in the building except for me, and I was really scared when I was recording this podcast because I knew people would hear it.
Yeah.
You know, just because I knew people would hear it, not that anyone was.
Yeah.
So I think that's the way a lot of people are, and more so with video. So I think it's just a matter of forcing yourself to do it over and over and over. It's like public speaking. You know, whenever I would speak at an event, I'd be driving there. I remember one time I said to myself, why do I do this to myself? I can't believe I'm doing this again, because I hated speaking in front of people so much. It really did. My heart would start ticking fast, and it would just really. And I remember that occasion, I don't know how many years ago that was. I said, I can't believe I did this again. Why am I doing this? And now I'm very comfortable at it, and as I am talking to you. Hmm. So I think it's just a matter of forcing yourself to do it. And even if you're uncomfortable, if you just keep forcing yourself to do it, you will get comfortable with it sooner or later. But you have to keep forcing yourself to do it, no matter how much you hate it, until you're comfortable with it.
Yeah, there's definitely a level of discipline there, isn't there? One of our recent guests, Linda Ugolo, talked about the fear of public speaking, and she coaches people on that. And her take was quite interesting in that she said, you can embrace the fear and you can still enjoy the attention you get from being on stage and delivering some value to your audience. And
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. The other thing I find really useful in all of those situations, and I try to bring this through in the podcast as well, is that it's about helping my audience. It's about help, you know, if it's a speech, it's about helping my audience. If it's something I'm writing, it's about helping the people who are going to read that. And so then the self-consciousness kind of fades away a little bit, or takes on less significance.
Yeah, it's kind of funny in my situation, because I had no problem being on stage. You know, I had starred in small theater companies and did theater in school, mm-hmm. and did a Christmas play with my daughter as the lead. I remember I told the guy, I said, my daughter wants to be in this play. That's why I'm doing it. So if she's not in it, I'm not in it.
Okay.
And so I got the lead, so she was in it. And I had no problems with that. But when it came to just standing there talking to people, for some reason, that was different than having a memorized script on a stage with lights and all these people, you know, really paying attention. I could handle that part really easy, but standing there in a room just talking with a PowerPoint presentation was really scary. I don't know why, since I didn't have a problem in front of crowds. You know, maybe it was because it was my peer group, maybe because I knew the people in the audience. I'm not sure why. You know, it was so much different for me. But I still, like I said, I remember gripping that steering wheel going, why am I doing this? I can't believe I'm doing this again.
Yeah.
And now on the way there, I'm pretty excited, you know, now that I'm comfortable with it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so there is a time it becomes comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a good message for everybody that's a little worried at the moment. All right. Well, this is fascinating, Gary. I could go on for ages, but I'm conscious of the time and respectful of your time. So I'd like to move on to the Buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions, and hopefully you can give us some really insightful answers that will inspire people to go away and do something awesome today.
I will try my best.
So what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I think, just like I said earlier, I think just be aware and realize that, there's so many things that are not, trying to phrase this properly, so bear with me. People don't invent as much as they used to. If you really look at things today, they're just improvements. The iPhone was just an improvement over something Alexander Graham Bell made hundreds of years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, some people say the internet was just an improvement over telegraph, you know, so most things to me don't have to be complete inventions. Improvements, I think, are what people need to look at on improving things, making things better, making a better version of things. Yeah, that's not an invention when you do that. It's not innovative maybe in that way. But I think that's what you see more of, and I think that's easier for people to do as a whole, is improve, if you want to call that being innovative. I don't know if it is or not, but that's what I do. I'm not very good at inventing the wagon wheel, but I can improve on the wheel. And I've always felt that way, you know, going, gosh, I really can't grasp this concept, but if I could see what someone else did, then I would be able to do a better version of that. And so that's how I feel about it.
Well, that's great advice. And who was it? Was it Newton, I think, who said that he stood on the shoulders of giants, the giants before him? I'm not sure if it was Newton, but one of the great inventors said that.
That'd be a great good statement. Did you know Isaac Newton's invented the gold standard?
Did he?
For money.
No, I didn't.
See, I really know a lot about this now. I didn't either. And that was a long time ago, right? We always think of these guys people from those ages, like Isaac Newton and Aristotle and people like that, as being, they didn't know what was going on way back there. But here, Isaac Newton makes the gold standard, which lasts until the 1970s, you know, and until the gold standard disappeared, the currency markets were pretty even, you know, and now there's all kind of fiascos because nobody's on the gold standard.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny. This guy made this thing that long ago that worked for that long, that well, and we probably should have stayed on. So getting off the subject again.
Yeah, it is fascinating. But it comes back to the idea of innovation, that, you know, improving on things can be quite innovative. And if you were having a chat, and can't remember who this was now, but it was one of the many interviews I did recently around disruption. And the point was made that innovation, you shouldn't be setting out to disrupt. It's, you know, change happens and disruption happens as a result of change, but you shouldn't be setting out to disrupt for the sake of disrupting. It's more about innovation, making things better and improving. So,
right. Yeah. That sounds like a good suggestion there.
Dave Burse, who said that to me, Dave Burse, who published a book recently on how to get great ideas. Anyway, what's your suggestion for the best? What is the best thing you've done to develop new ideas yourself?
watch TV, probably. as much as I hate to say that, I have developed many an idea from just watching TV. I mean, it sounds crazy to say. I watch a lot of TV. I'm pretty selective on what I watch, but I do watch. Now I watch more YouTube and things like that, but I still watch them on my TV. But, you know, I go through a lot of channels and I watch a lot of stuff and I watch a lot of commercials too, because I enjoy watching commercials. I enjoy watching. I'll either go, wow, that was a really good commercial. I'll go, really? Who came up with that commercial? And who's going to like believe that? And my wife would go, what are you talking about? Was there something wrong with that? I'm going, really? You don't think there was anything wrong with that commercial? You believe that guy has all that money? Or whatever the situation is. So yeah. I watch a lot of TV, and a lot of people don't like TV and don't like TV, but I feel like it can give you a lot of ideas. You can see a lot of information in a short amount of time. It's just according to what your frame of mind is while you're watching it, though. You know, some people get really sucked into it, you know, and they're just mesmerized. And in that case, you're not going to get anything out of it. But if you watch it and you're able to control your thinking and how you look at things, I think you can learn. And one time, I don't know if this story was true or not, but I can't remember what it was. I heard this, gosh, back in the 70s, mid-70s, there was this really rich guy at the time, and I can't remember who he was, but he had, during the day, he had like 10 TVs on his wall, because that was probably all the TV channels there were, you know, back then, if there were that many. And he would watch all 10 of them at one time. And for ideas, you know, instead, I guess he couldn't flip through the channels for some reason.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing that story for some reason. And I think to a degree I do that. I kind of watch what's happening on TV instead of watching the TV, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think there's, what you've said there in terms of watching what's happening and understanding what's behind that. I like to watch a movie occasionally and look at deconstructing it later and say, well, what's, you know, are there some metaphors in there for life or business? So I guess that's another example of how you might be able to approach that to get ideas.
Yeah, I usually, when I watch a movie, I usually break it down and go, that's impossible. And I'll break it down and I go, Gary, it's a movie about a guy flying. It's all impossible. Yeah, but there's no way he could have done this. They go, well, he couldn't fly either, Gary. So quit.
Yeah.
Get
Yes, but all right, we'll move on.
I don't know if that's the answer you're on.
I was just going to follow that path a little bit, but that could take ages. So what's your favorite tool or system for improving productivity and allowing you to be more innovative?
I'd say the way I have my my display system set up on my computers. I run 4 monitors here, and on every monitor I have a different browser with the sites on it that I want to use for that niche or genre. Or, you know, I have one browser, it's a Google browser, and it's just set up for things that I'm going to use on the 4-Minute Crypto Show. And I have another browser that's set up just for the Crypto Cousins. And I have another browser that's just set up for me, for Gary Leland. And I have another browser that's set up for my wallpaper industry. So I can look at all these and go where I want to instantaneously. It really helps me operate. I have a lot of screens with a lot of browsers. And a lot of people come and go, oh, how do you use all that? But I know which screen is which browser. You know, so I know if I need to go work on the wallpaper stuff, I go over to browser C. And all my tabs are there when I open it. I have all my tabs there, so I can click on the tab I need to go to. So when my computer comes on, all these browsers open and go to where they're supposed to go. And, you know, they all have the tabs on them already so that I can go to all, like on this browser here, this is my crypto browser. There's 15 tabs, that it opens up with approximately. So those are the 15 most popular sites that I use on that browser, so I can just go straight to it. So, and then I use Mailplane for my mail, which I really like a lot, because I use Gmail, and it's a Gmail, so I can carry work up to 6 different Gmail addresses with that one browser, plus 2 Google calendars that I use, according to whether it's my personal stuff or my crypto stuff. So, and that's the same thing on Mailplane. It has tabs at the top for every Gmail account I have that I use Gmail on. I can swing back and forth to there. And since there's only like 8 of those that I use, you know, I can really swing back and forth pretty easy. I'll need several browsers, several monitors for that. So I'd say it's my setup, you know, that I use. That's instead really, of a tool someone else made.
Yeah, yeah. That's really interesting. I'm envious in some ways. I've got 3 monitors and I've got lots of browsers open in different things. And I keep thinking I don't have enough browsers open, but obviously the more browsers you open up, the more it slows down the computer. And I've probably hit the limit of what my system can handle at the moment. But I do find it really useful to have things at your fingertips, like you say.
Yeah, like I said, it's not a real technical tool. You know, I mean, I do use some tools I like Final Cut and GarageBand and Mailplane, which I just named, and Wunderlist and things like that. But I'd say as far as being able to operate during the day, it's my setup, my basic setup.
All right. And what's the best way to keep a project on track?
Well, that's a really bad one to ask me, because as I said earlier, I don't have a set format. I just work on stuff. I use Wunderly or Wunderlist, and I've just started using that recently, which I'd really like it a lot to keep things I have to take care of on there. But for the most part, I'm not very good at keeping on track at all. I jump from thing to thing. So I could have tried to come up with some great idea, but I just really am not good at keeping on track.
Okay. All right.
Well, I really am not. I just all of a sudden look and go, okay, I got some time. Let's go finish writing a chapter of a book. You know, and I'll work on that for, you know, 20 minutes. And I go, okay, I'm tired of working on this. And I'll go to do something else. So I hop around a lot. That's why I like so many browsers open. I hop around a lot.
Yeah.
I think it's something to do. I think I'm attention deficit, you know. And my wife says I am. And so I have to move from one thing to another.
Yeah.
I have a hard time keeping focused.
All right. Well, we appreciate your honesty, but we'll also share the Wunderlist suggestion. I've had a look at that from time to time and I really liked it.
I like it because I can use it on my phone or on my computer, and I can make lists and share with people, you know, if I'm doing a project with someone. So I like it a lot. And I think it was free or 99 cents or something. I mean, it's amazing how cheap apps are. So most of them. And, you know, another tool I really like a lot, since we're talking about tools, is Big View, BigVu. I know it's on Apple iPhones. I don't know if it's on Android or not, but it's a teleprompter app for my iPhone, and it syncs with my laptop. So I can write my scripts on my laptop. You know, while I'm sitting here, I can just write my scripts and stuff and take care of them and edit them with a keyboard instead of my thumbs. And then I can bring it up on my iPhone when I'm shooting my video, because I use my iPhone to shoot my video. And I can bring it my teleprompter and it shoots the video of me while I can read the screen.
Oh,
I like that. I like that a lot. That's like my favorite tool out of everything I use.
Okay. I'll take a look at that, because I haven't come across that one.
Yeah, guy out of Germany, a big Twitter guy out of Germany who does a lot of political campaigns, told me about that. He said it was life changing. I said, I got to see it if you're saying it's life changing.
Yeah.
And because I think he was the biggest Twitter user in Germany. And I said, if you're saying it's life changing, I need to see it. And he showed it to me. I said, well, I'm just buying it now just because you're saying it's life changing.
Yeah.
And it has really changed how I do my videos.
All right.
So if you're into videos and you do your iPhone to do your videos with, to shoot your videos of yourself, you really need to look at it.
All right. Well, we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. And what's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I think that if you just be yourself and be honest about who you are and not try to be some big shot, I think you'll differentiate yourself because you're just going to be different naturally. I think too many people like to come on and make like they're pros at something. This probably isn't answering the question how you wanted it answered. I just see a lot of people who get on shows and all of a sudden they're starting out a show and they act like they're the most knowledgeable person in the world. And they're not different. They're not being themselves. So they're just sounding like everybody else. I ran into a guy last month at the Texas Bitcoin conference. Of course, everything I'm talking about is crypto because that's what I'm really obsessed with right now. And I had met him a year before at the Texas Bitcoin conference. And I'd been in crypto like 2 weeks when I went to that and met him. And he came up to me, recognized me, talking to me, and he listened to the show, and he goes, "Wow, you know, you really know your stuff now in a year." And I said, "Well, thanks. I've been working really hard trying to." He goes, "You know, the thing I was so impressed with about you that really stood out to me was the fact that when I met you, you told me you knew nothing. No one comes up to me and tells me they know nothing at a conference like this. They always tell me they know their big time." And I said, "Yeah, well, I knew nothing. I just was being honest." But that made a real big effect on him. He remembered that, where if I had been one of the people who said, "Oh, I know everything," he may not have remembered me a year later. And he's kind of, and he is kind of a big shot. Yeah. So I felt like the fact that I was myself and I was true to who I am really did help me stand out.
Yeah, that's really great advice. I mean, a lot of people pick a model, and instead of learning from that model and, you know, treating them as a mentor or virtual mentor, if they don't have a direct relationship, they copy them and they kind of try to be that person.
I agree completely. It's like when I tell people who come to work for me here that are answering the phone, taking orders, when people call in from the website, for some reason, some people want to call in instead of using the ordering online. And I say, "Hey, tell them you're new." If you tell them you're new, they're going to be patient with you. Yeah. If you act like you're a seasoned pro, they're going to, and you can't do it, they're going to like be frustrated with you and start calling you a dummy. Going, "What kind of?" But if they know you're new, they're going to be really patient with you. So tell the people, "I'll take your order, but I'm kind of new, so please bear with me." You know, and then they'll bear with you. So, you know, tell them the truth. Just be honest with them.
Yeah, that's a great analogy as well. All right. Well, thanks so much, Gary. This has been really great. Where can people reach out to you and say thank you? And what's the best place? Because there are so many of them.
I'm like Gary Leland on everything.
Yeah.
Except Instagram. I don't know how someone got Gary Leland. So I'm Gary_Leland. But I think everywhere else, or if you just search Google, I'm like the first 10 pages, I think. You know, so that's the easiest way to find me is just search Google.
Yeah. And there's a lesson in that too, that you're the first 10 pages. That's putting out so much content means you Google list you there.
Yeah. And maybe only the first 8 pages. I mean, somebody there was a dead person in there somewhere, a guy who committed suicide. He was the only thing that kept me from being all the pages up front. You know, I haven't looked at it a long time when I say that, but I am the majority of pages under the search term.
All right. So what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field and in innovation?
Get involved. Get involved in that field, get involved in whatever it is. You know, an example is I wanted to get involved in tech in Dallas. I could go to an event in San Diego or to New York for PodFest, and people knew me all the way. I go to Dallas and an event, and no one knew who I was. I mean, it's funny. I could go, gosh, I can go to New York and people know me. And I go over to Dallas because I'm in Arlington and no one knows who I am. So I really started getting involved in the community, the tech community. I started working with people who were in the fields I am in. I started giving them my time. You know, I was really involved in WordPress. So I got involved in the WordPress community over there and started videotaping their speakers for them. And I became well strong in that community. And then I ended up starting a partnership with people in that community and businesses. And it's flowered from there. So I'm going to say, it's a matter of getting involved in that niche, that community, whatever, if you want to build that.
That's great advice. And you bring up something that's really interesting there as well. And I think it's critical for all small businesses is to build relationships and build partnerships. Getting involved with other people can be so rewarding and can actually underpin success in other areas.
Right. Exactly. Mm. Exactly. Like I said, it's, you know, it never hurts to have a lot of friends.
Yeah. All right.
It's finally hard to make them.
Yeah, that's right. Finally, then, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
Have you interviewed Rob Walsh?
No, I haven't.
I'd like you to interview, I'm going to give you two people I'd like you to interview. So instead of one, I'd like you to interview Rob Walsh with Libsyn. Rob was the I think Rob may have been the first person in the world to quit a job just to do podcasting back in 2004. So, and he was one of the co-hosts on Today in Podcasting with Dave Jackson and myself, the first podcast news show about podcasting. And the other person I'm going to give the name is Paul Colligan.
Paul, yeah.
Paul wrote the podcast Bible back in 2005. He's one of the original podcasters, and he was the other co-host on Today in Podcasting. So him, Rob, and Dave Jackson and I. So I'm going to try to finish out the Today in Podcasting crew by giving you those two names. That'll and like I said, Rob's in the Hall of Fame. Dave's in the Hall of Fame. I'm in the Hall of Fame. And I look forward to Paul going in the Hall of Fame soon.
Yeah. All right. Well, so I'll complete the set.
Paul's a marketing. I consider Paul a marketing whiz.
Yeah, when he is. Yeah, I've been following Paul. Actually, I think I've been following Paul since before he started his podcast because he was doing a lot of marketing stuff that I was interested in.
He's been doing it forever. I mean, I've done several things and I've called up Paul and say, Paul, I'm stealing your idea. And I'm doing it for softball. You know, yeah. He might have been doing it for something else, for blogs or for WordPress. I said, that's a great idea. I'm stealing it and doing that same thing, but for softball.
Yeah.
So I've done that several times, is stolen his idea and moved it over to my niche because no one in my niche was doing that idea. Mm-hmm. He did a book, 100 YouTube tips, and had people all write chapters. I didn't know if it was 100. It was YouTube tips. And he had people write chapters, and I wrote a chapter on it because I've had like 4.5 million views. I looked the other day on one of my YouTube channel. And so I wrote a chapter, and a bunch of people did. I said, well, gosh, I told him, I'm going to steal that idea and do a podcasting book. So I wrote a podcasting book, 100 podcast tips.
Yeah.
And I had like 100 of the world's top podcasters all give me a tip. And some of them were 2 or 3 page tips, 1 page tips. And so I've stole Paul ideas a lot of time. Yeah, but I always tell them I'm going to do it. So I'm up front one.
Yeah. All right. Well, Rob and Paul, keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from us to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Gary Leyland. So really looking forward to those. All right, Gary.
Yeah, they're both good guys. They're both good guys.
So, yeah, so thanks for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today, Gary. I've learned a lot. I've written down a whole bunch of notes. I might even have a couple of ideas there that I'll steal from you. I'll let you know. And
that's fine.
I know.
Like I said, no one's, you know, the wheel's already been invented. All you can do is prove it from here.
Yeah.
You know, there's not many inventions. I was listening to a show the other day, the amount of inventions that are made now, if you really take them, that most of them are not inventions. And the most inventions were made in the 1800s compared to now. The amount made in the 1800s was humongous. Yeah. I mean, it was like a historic amount of inventions, especially compared to now.
Yeah. So we all improve on ideas and refine them.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, well, it's like the digital clock was just, what was there, a watch before that? And there was a sundial before that. I mean, you
that's
know.
That's right.
I mean,
yeah.
It was just an improvement. Someone already invented the watch or the clock or whatever you want to call it. So,
exactly. Okay. And the planets have been moving around the sun for quite a few years.
Yeah, except we got rid of one, right?
Yeah.
Pluto.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Gary. I wish you all the best for the future and let's keep in touch.
Sure. Sounds good. Thanks for having me on. Good luck to you.
I hope you enjoyed that delightful conversation with Gary and, like me, learnt something new. Gary's involved in so many activities, all of which are quite successful. And for me, the theme that came through was his ability to see a need and find a way to deliver a product or service to fill that need. Of course, there was so much more valuable information in the interview with Gary, from tips about podcasting, about video, about speaking, and even about cryptocurrency. I'd love to know what you took away from Gary's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/Gary Leyland. That is GARYLELAND. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Gary Leyland. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Gary there, as well as links to his websites and some of the other things we spoke about. Gary suggested I interview Rob Walsh from Libsyn and Paul Colligan, another podcasting expert, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Rob and Paul, keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Gary Leyland. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP to access the Transformational Marketing Hub and all its free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. Stay connected. Head on over to iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts and subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you make sure you'll never miss another episode. We'd also love you to leave us a review, because what you think matters. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic LinkedIn community at the Transformational Marketing Academy. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMAC. It's free to join. Hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.